Welcome to Wind Tucson on this Tuesday. I think it's starting to get warmer, Matt. I think we're finally going to get spring into summer.
Indeed.
And then we'll wish for these days that we were cold.
Ready or not.
So a lot going on in the world today, and I just want to just send out my prayers for those in Nashville. Yesterday, anytime we have a shooting and people die, it is a tragic situation, and this is going to unravel for a few days. The shooter was 28 years old. She had attended this school. She was raised in a Christian family, and she had shared with her friend that she was going to commit suicide. Her friend contacted police. I will say police, from the time the incident started till it was done, was 14 minutes. They went in, they ran towards the gunfire, and they took out the shooter. Unfortunately, there were six victims, three children and three adults. My daughter lives in Nashville. She couldn't leave her home yesterday. She's a teacher herself, not at that school. And she was 3 years older than the shooter, and she was devastated. And so personally, this is a tough thing when this happens, and we will pray for the families of those children and the administrators that were killed yesterday. This was unfolding for some time, and the shooter was going from transitioning from being a girl to a boy, and had decided that she didn't want to live anymore. And unfortunately, this is how she went out and took innocent lives with her. So we're going to shift from that to another topic that is about victims and victims in our schools. We have school administrators that are made aware of problems that are happening in their schools. They are mandatory reporters. So their job is to tell law enforcement, to tell those that prosecute the laws, that there are incidences going on when a teacher, administrator, someone in the school system, janitor, coach, acts inappropriately with our children. But that's not happening. And as a result, we have child victims. I've invited back Katie McPherson. Katie is an amazing advocate. She is a youth mental health advocate. She works specifically to help children in suicide prevention, but also in other mental health incidences that happen because kids are vulnerable. Katie, welcome to Wind Tucson.
Thanks so much for having me today.
We also are joined by two parents. We're not going to tell you their names, but they, for 2 years, have been dealing with the consequences. They have a daughter who at the time of the incident, I believe, was 12, and we'll let them tell us that part of the story. But they thought they were doing everything right, but the school wasn't honest with them. So, Katie, I'd like you to start because we're going to be generic. We're not going to mention the school by name. We're going to tell the story because, unfortunately, this is a school in Arizona, but it could probably be a lot of schools in Arizona. So, Katie, I'll let you start.
Yeah, I just, as a mandatory reporter myself, you know, when you go through education school and you go through administrative training, Admin 101 is if a child has been potentially hurt, potentially abused, that we are certified to report any type of inappropriate touch, inappropriate contact, and that includes electronically, digitally, et cetera. So whenever I am working with clients or people that come to me for help, you know, I am still certificated even though I'm not on campus. And so those reports need to immediately go to the police to be investigated by a forensically trained person.
And so to the parents of this particular case, that did not happen. And so,
it often doesn't happen. Unfortunately, about 90% of what goes on in our schools is not reported to the police, which is obviously a huge problem. And that's not just an Arizona thing. That's a national statistic at the secondary level.
And as a result, this child was not the only child that was a victim of this, I'm going to say teacher, but other children were. So you were brought together with these parents, and I don't know when you guys, but this incident happened over 2 years ago.
Correct.
At a time when the child was 12, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. And often with these types of cases, and often, as everyone probably knows, you know, it may take years for the victim to come forward. It may take years for the impact of the trauma to come out, but it always comes out in some way, shape, or form. And behavior, you know, all behavior is communication. So when I was contacted about the behavior that was going on, you know, my first question was, what triggered this downward spiral of your child? And that's when it was disclosed that this teacher had inappropriately touched not only their child, but upwards of at least 7 students and probably many more that we don't know about.
So I'm going to have the parents that are with us, and I'll just call you parents, okay? Your daughter was a great student, happy, everything's going along, and then all of a sudden started acting out. Did you know right away what had happened?
No, it's kind of. It's really a hard story to tell, but we'll do the best that we can with some broad strokes. But first, I just wanted to thank you for having us on. And we had a great discussion the other day, and my wife and I both walked away from it thinking that now we finally found a route to instigate some action on our back.
So, before we begin, I just want to say thank you, because what the journey that you're on, and it's not complete, you're still in the middle of it, but you're farther along than you were. It takes great courage to come forward when you have a situation, and you didn't have a rule book, a playbook. You didn't know what you were going to do, and you are a great demonstration for other parents who want to get things straight in their kids' school. So it's my privilege to have you on today, and thank you. So go ahead.
Well, thank you. It feels like we've made every wrong move along the way, but like you said, you don't get a playbook. Unfortunately, the other side does. They kind of know all the rules. Like I've said this before too, this journey has been like a chess match, and like they know the rules and all the special moves, and we still think we're playing checkers. I think before we get into like how we found out, you know, I'd like to
I hate to do this to you. We have to take a short break, but since we're right at this point, we're going to be gone for about a minute and a half, 2 minutes. When we come back, let's pick up wherever you want to pick up, and we'll go from there. And that'll be perfect. We've got to do those commercials, and I apologize for that. It's never at a good time. This is Kathleen Wynn. You're listening to Wynn Tucson on AM 1030, The Voice. We will be back with A Parent's Nightmare right after this. Solutions for Everyday Problems. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson, and we definitely have a problem in our schools, and mandatory reporting, administrators covering things up and not taking care of our kids. We're talking to two parents and to Katie McPherson, who is an advocate for youth in mental areas of mental health. Parents, where we left off, go ahead and tell me, and we don't have to get into all the details. I don't want to,
no problem.
But your daughter, something happens.
Sure. Just real quick. I listened to your format quickly last night just to see what we're doing.
Yes.
And I picked an episode with the state superintendent, Tom Horn.
Correct.
He mentioned some of his campaign promises and meeting those obligations and oaths and setting up some feedback routes. And he mentioned something that was kind of interesting to me about a call through the hotline, which, I mean, it wasn't set up for this, but he said it was a possible sexual abuse case. And Superintendent Horn then stated, and I wrote it down here because I wanted to get back. He said, turned it right over to authorities. Cool. And like, that just made me smile. I was like, okay, that's how you handle things. Right at the top, Mr. Horn says, turned it right over to authorities. And, you know, that's kind of the gist of why we're here right here.
Because school officials did not do that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. My wife and I, we're not sworn mandatory reporters like administrators and teachers here in Arizona. I mean, but we're decent human beings, and we know what we're going to do when somebody comes to us with allegations of sexual anything, you know? So, I mean, it always gets a little tricky when you get into this because, you know, this is a long conversation. You know, I hope we get into like some of the key terms in Title IX. And
well, I think what we should do, because we only have like, if you don't mind, I'm going to kind of just having talked to you. I just want to say there was an incident that happened. Your daughter went and reported it, correct?
Correct. She came forward to report. That's kind of where it gets tricky. She came forward to report sexual abuse, harassment, misconduct, whatever. A kid doesn't care. They're coming forward to report something.
Right.
Our fully matured, rational minds have to categorize it into, hey, it's sexual, okay, harassment, right? But let's just, like, it's unwanted touching in the classroom is what it is.
So
it's
this male teacher touched your daughter inappropriately.
Yes. I mean, it's physical contact from teacher to student. You know, a position mm-hmm. Person in position of trust came forward. She said to another administrator, hey, this person is touching us and making us feel uncomfortable. And I say us, I mean, one is enough, really, for a complaint to be started or for an investigation to take place. But unfortunately, that's not what happened here. You know, it was, hey, do you know anybody else type of investigation? And yeah, we got the numbers up into multiple numbers of people that are aware of it, so much so that months before the first allegation, I guess this is probably not too much details, but the kids had created their own sort of texting support group and even documented some of the occurrences.
So I just ask Katie, did you talk to some of these other students?
I did not.
Okay. But you are aware that there are other students that were touched by this particular teacher?
Yes, and I'm also aware there were students struggling with their mental health, meaning suicidal ideation, due to the trauma from being touched.
And I believe, I thought the number was 4, so that were struggling, if I remember correctly.
I'm aware of 2 total, but again, without students being, you know, interviewed by a forensically trained detective that is trained in the area of sex crimes against children, we wouldn't know. You know, there may be other victims out there, obviously.
Yes, and that and this is really at the heart of the matter. So your daughter comes forward, others, there's a group of people that have been sexually harassed, touched inappropriately by this teacher. They go to administrators. Your daughter is kind of the one that really is not, I won't say not backing down, because she was really not outspoken, not, she was just trying to it was hard for her. She was trying to get this resolved. And what did this administration do? Did they run to law enforcement? Did they make what did they do to handle?
The opposite of what they were supposed to do, you know, instead of, protecting her and supporting her, they isolated her and, they've got this good old boy network to squash these kinds of claims. You know, they just dismiss and discredit her ability to come forward because they don't acknowledge it. And when they do acknowledge it, they dismiss it, and it's an us versus them type scenario.
So, your little daughter, who's 12, had multiple interactions with administrators, male administrators, pretty much, when I looked at the list, and they questioned her over and over and over again, which, for those of us that deal with children with trauma, or anybody with trauma, you're telling them to retell their trauma over and over again, which re-traumatizes them. And here's the thing that really, in reading everything that you all sent me, were you informed each and every time that they were doing this with your daughter?
We were never informed. Actually, we didn't find out until probably a year later in therapy, you know? And, you know, that's PTSD. Like, we finally found out, hey, why you don't want to go to school anymore, you know?
Because every time she went, they were trying to break her down and try to put holes in her story.
Absolutely.
Yeah, she just went on a downward spiral, didn't want to go to school, grades slipped, no longer had friendships, started self-harm, and all the while we continually, once we found out what the cause of this behavior was, asked for some help, asked for some from the district. Is there somebody she can talk to? Do you have something set up for this? And that's more of the story as well, is we never got that.
Not only did they not help you, but they lied to you, right? So you
Unfortunately, we were under the assumption, and I specifically asked them, you know, as long as law enforcement's involved, they asked for our patients while they investigated. Things were unfolding. And that was basically the last communication that we ever had. But they asked for patients as they investigated. Well, they didn't investigate. That was the problem. And we were under the assumption that they were investigating. So when we finally contacted the police, you know, when they got done, you know, handling us and stalling us and dismissing our stuff, we finally contacted the sheriff, and the sheriff's like, what complaint? And we were just completely floored. And
they had never filed one. They had never involved the school resource officer at all.
They did tell their school board, right?
Oh, absolutely not.
No.
So you've got administrators who have multiple complaints of inappropriate touching, sexual harassment, sexual abuse by one of their teachers. And not only do they not report it as mandatory reporters, but as administrators, they continually try to isolate the victim, and then they don't even tell their school board.
No, and they allowed the teacher to continue to teach for multiple months afterwards.
We had to move, and, you know, parents that were concerned or children that felt uncomfortable were moved out of the classroom while he continued to, you know, sexually harass the kids in class until it happened again. And then he was reprimanded. Nothing happened at that point. He was just put on notice that he was going to be put under investigation, and decided, well, maybe I'll just resign. And that was very convenient.
Did he resign or did he retire?
Well, I'm not sure what the what's the difference. It says resignation, I believe, and then a reason for listed down below. So
okay.
There's multiple reasons listed on a form of resignation.
Katie, we have about a minute. As someone who was a school administrator, you were a principal, is that the right thing to do? And then when we come back, we'll pick this up. We're going to have a break. But please share with my listeners, what should the school have done?
There's a very quick internal investigation and then an immediate takeover by the school police officer and his fellow lieutenant.
That's what should have happened.
That's what it's admin 101. This is easy stuff.
And so
we as school administrators are not investigators. We are not forensically trained, and we are not to be interviewing students about sexual abuse.
And yet there were four or five interviews of this particular student, this young girl, who's now, I think, only 14. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to pick this up. Where are we now? What these parents have learned and what you as parents should know what's going on in your kids' school. Make sure you talk to your kids. I'm Kathleen Wynn. This is Wynn Tucson on 1030 AM The Voice. To our sponsors and then back to this conversation. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson. We're talking to two parents whose daughter was sexually molested in her school. And the parents thought that the school was doing all their proper mandates and everything that they should be doing, when in fact they were trying to cover it up and they were hoping that it would just go away. Ultimately, the perpetrator, the person that not only touched their child but others, retired, resigned, however you want to put it. I learned a term while talking to Katie about this called passing the trash. So we are talking to Katie McPherson, who is a mental health advocate for young people, fights against kids committing suicide, and two parents whose daughter, after this incident, had a downward spiral. She's now doing well, thanks to concerned, attentive parents who started to uncover what had happened. So I've got those parents on. And I'd like to, Katie, can you just explain to my listeners what passing the trash is? And then we're going to go back to the story.
Well, I hate the term because it means that we are not fulfilling our duty to protect. And it really just means allowing these types of predators and pedophiles to just go to another school district and teach and to prey and groom and lure other students. So we have an obligation not only to stop the violence, but also to report to the State Board of Education so that this person has their teaching certificate or administrative certificate revoked.
And if this man wanted to come out of retirement, and I'm going to put that in air quotes, he could, because he's now not been prosecuted or investigated. I mean, I think it's about to happen, but but we're talking 2 years, I'd hate to call these administrators co-conspirators, but they protected the perpetrator. And I'd like to go back to our parents. Is that the part that just is the most galling to you? Is that the part that is the most frustrating?
It's definitely the most hurtful or the biggest betrayal, because her little voice just wanted to, you know, stand up and say, hey, something ain't right here. And, you know, the rest of the kids were doing the same. Hey, you know, we're uncomfortable. We don't like this. And for them to, you know, put him on notice and then still let it happen, and up to the point where they have to let him go and then just let him sneak off instead of being investigated, that's one thing. But for them to continue, you know, trying to snow us and just stall for time so that, you know, they handled us in a way that felt like it was by routine, like they'd done it before and they knew exactly what I was going to try to say to get answers or hold them accountable. And that's what we're really after at this point, you know, because like we said, she's doing a lot better, but we still want the accountability. Like this isn't the first time they've done it, and they'll do it again.
Well, and there's nothing to stop this perpetrator, who, by the way, I heard also took the girls in his class on little field trips that no one was notified about, inappropriate touching of other students. And I think that the administrators knew that they had a problem. And you've uncovered, so I have to give you credit, you've uncovered a lot of information. They had files about this, but as you've uncovered this, you've uncovered that they didn't do any of the protocols that they should have, correct?
Yeah, well, they did quite the opposite. You know, I mean, sworn to protect, well, not sworn to protect our children, they're sworn to protect the district. Yeah. And that's what they've had in mind from day one, from the time that they were trying to work behind the scenes to push us away and tell us there's nothing to see here.
And even uncovering it has been an upward hill, trying to get information ourselves personally.
I mean,
it's been difficult. Even the authorities were turned away trying to get information. They bombarded us with legal representatives on their half not wanting to give us information.
I mean, we didn't understand how you say to the sheriff's office that, no, we're not going to talk to you about an alleged crime on your campus.
And they did. There was a sheriff investigator, and they slow walked information to, I think it was a she, right? To her?
Yeah. Yeah. Before running everything past legal counsel, of course.
Of course. So they're clearly in protect mode. The other thing that has occurred here is that you have multiple victims, apparently, but your daughter was somehow outed, and other students were like, they liked this teacher. This teacher let them listen to their or be on their cell phones in his class or other things. So he was a popular teacher, which is, we see this a lot, that they and people liked him. So we don't want to pick on him because we like him. And he's not held accountable because he's popular. And your daughter was somewhat bullied in this school. Is that true?
Correct. Yeah, once these girls came forward, the other students found out about it and then looked at the girls that came forward as, why would you say that about that teacher? They were questioned as being, if their stories were truthful, and ostracized by their student body then, with no support from the school administration, you know, saying, you know, we're looking into it. They just were classified as liars by their students.
Do you have a copy of the notice that was sent out to all the parents about the potential that this might have happened?
We're still waiting.
There was no notice.
There was no notice, right? So this happened. There were multiple victims, and the school did exactly what they shouldn't have done. Katie, do they have liability as school officials, school administrators?
Absolutely. Under ARS 15-1620 and 15-5314, Section F.
And you guys, there was an OCR complaint. And could you, as the parents, explain to my listeners what that is?
Sure. I mean, it gets pretty crazy, you know, having to learn all this stuff kind of on the fly, so to speak. You know, they already know, and you know, where they can stall me out of some of those rights that are available to you under federal protections, you know, at the OCR, Office of Civil Rights. You know, we have been, I mean, from the time that she came forward to, you know, a trusted adult to the point that, you know, we thought that, oh, okay, well, they're investigating. You know, we have notified everybody and then some, hey, let's look into this. But the Office of Civil Rights was the first legal body to kind of respond and say, hey, sorry, you missed the deadline on what really happened here, but we can see that they definitely did not protect you, or they definitely contributed to, the overall condition by not acknowledging the protected act of coming forward. You know, and even further ostracizing her because of it, you know, interrogating, you know, and then isolating, you know, because the people that are coming forward are not in class if they're uncomfortable. So where are they going to go? But I mean, I hope the teacher was comfortable because our daughter surely wasn't.
Well, and if you think about an adult male and you think about a small child who's vulnerable, who's innocent, who didn't want the inappropriate touching and has the courage to come forward and then is re-victimized and re-traumatized. I understand your shock and outrage. How could you not? And what, unfortunately, and this is the most unfortunate part of all of this, is that this is happening in an area in the state, we're not going to say where, but we know that this isn't just happening in this school, but these people, and when this will be outed in the very near future, I'm confident, these administrators did nothing right. They did everything to make your daughter wrong, to make you wrong as parents, to make Katie wrong as an advocate, and did nothing right but to try to protect themselves and to lie and misrepresent what was happening here. And I think they should have liability for that, but everybody, and some of these teachers were involved with another incident earlier on. They learned no lessons from this. And when this comes out, I think, and it's all out, and it will be soon, they need to be held accountable for trying to silence the voice of your daughter and not get her the appropriate help that she needed. It's egregious.
Yeah, I mean, they made huge mistakes, and they've done it in the past, and they're educators that can't learn lessons. But to not take care of our daughter, okay, like, you guys made some major mistakes. I caught you, and you still can't, you can't help. Like, you just deny and hide, and you can't acknowledge the wrongdoing so that we can fix it and move forward to make sure it doesn't happen again.
What is your advice to other parents? Because this was, if you had said to you 3 years ago, you'd be doing this right now, you would have said, oh, no, our school's good. It's a good school.
Yeah.
What is your advice?
Unfortunately, don't trust them to do the right thing.
Mm. Yeah, I think you have to really be diligent on your part and be your child's biggest spokesperson. And take it into your own hands.
And Katie, as someone who deals with children that have mental health issues and vulnerabilities, what do you say to parents? Because you see this all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I have 4 teenage daughters of my own, and what I would say to parents is you must equip and empower them to be their own advocates at a very early age, because statistically, 1 in 5 female or male students will be in this situation in a high school setting. And so preparing them in elementary school, you know, about inappropriate touch and your body is your own, and even trusted adults can be tricky strangers, is so, so important.
And there's such a push right now to touch our children and to talk about their bodies and hypersexualization in the schools, so that this teacher doing this is a slippery slope, because we've been allowing inappropriate content into our schools, so that this teacher who's trying to do this with 12-year-old girls didn't think anything of it, and unfortunately he has multiple victims. And then the administration on top of it protects his inappropriate actions and act like nothing to see here. And then they thwart your efforts as parents and as advocates to try to help these students. And that just can't be. Like, if there is an outcry and an uproar when this all gets presented, no one should have their kids in public school. I'm sorry. This is unacceptable, what has happened here. And what we need to find is all the victims that this person has. I'm confident there's other victims, maybe even before he got to this school. He was only at the school for, 5 months? And we know of at least 7 or 8 victims?
Right. Yeah. This
was
not his first rodeo.
Yeah. Well, Katie, I mean, because he's... we won't say. This was an older person. This was not his first rodeo. And I'm confident that as this story gets out and this is revealed, and it will be. And I want to thank the parents for being relentless in your pursuit of investigating and continuing to push this forward despite all efforts to stop you and to shut you down and to stop the cover-up, because these administrators were more committed to their paychecks than they were to the pupils in their school, and the children in their school that deserve their protection. We've got about a minute. What would you like to say?
Probably just still don't be afraid to stand up for your rights. I mean, sometimes it takes a long time to be heard. And, you know, I think that's where I would challenge our county and state government to listen to a voice and hold these people accountable.
Yeah. And Katie, this school board now is fully aware and they're going to have some hard decisions to make. Do you agree?
Yes, they are aware, and I hope at least one of the five of them has the courage to do the right thing.
And that's sad that there's only one on that board that would know to do the right thing. And that's why, again, back to my listeners, it is so important that we put the right people on our school boards. It is such an important job, and we must protect our children. I want to thank you. We will bring you back when we can talk more about this. Thank you for loving your daughter as much as you do and for listening to her and to just getting her. And she's doing well. So that's the good part of this story. Thanks for being those parents. And we applaud your efforts. Katie will be in touch soon. Thank you for just being the advocate that you are. Always love working with you. And we will continue to fight these fights. You're listening to Wynn Tucson on 10:30 a.m. The Voice. Kathleen Wynn will be back right after this. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson. This is Kathleen Wynn, and we're going to shift gears a little bit here. We're still going to stay on the topic of children, but we're going to talk about children that are having to deal with the very adult thing of cancer and other issues where they're getting medical treatments. And we have a group in Tucson, Mirror Mirror Aesthetics and Wellness Team, and they're having an event on Saturday. And it's a wonderful event where they are raising awareness about a program. And I've invited Kerestin Marsh on the show to talk about Mirror Mirror and who they are and what they're doing. So welcome to welcome to Wynn Tucson, Kerestin. It's great to have you here.
Well, good morning, Kathleen. This is a fantastic opportunity for us to get to speak with you today. Thank you so much for having us on so we can share this awareness. We're having a special event on April 1st. It's Saturday from 11 to 2 at our location on Orange Grove. So we are Mirror Mirror Medical Aesthetics. We're a functional medicine and aesthetic med spa doing lots of fun things like facials, injectables, laser, medical weight loss is a vibrant program here, microneedling, radio frequency for everyone. But we have two big events a year. The first is our spring open house. So we're very excited. This is the first year we get to partner in a charity event with Beads of Courage. And Beads of Courage, as you know, is a local organization, amazing organization that supports children coping with serious illness and their families. So thank you so much for bringing that up. We're here to kind of share our event with them. We'll be donating $1 for every unit of Botox we sell at our spring event. So along with having kind of a spring open house where we have our features and services on special for 20 to 60% off all of our products and services. So bringing that word out to the valley, Beats of Courage is really a great partner. Not only are they patients, but they do so many fundraising things throughout the valley within the Tucson area, but also internationally. So it's a great opportunity to work with them.
So Kerestin, where is the location? It's 11 to do you have 11 to 1 or 11 to 2? I have on my...
It's actually 11 o'clock to 2 p.m. This coming Saturday. And the location address is 1880 West Orange Grove in Tucson, Arizona. The main cross streets are Orange Grove and La Cholla.
Wonderful. And on the Beads of Courage, when we were talking about this yesterday, because I was curious about what it was, and I think it's wonderful that we as women and even men can get... beautiful. As we get older, we all need a little help. I'll just admit to it. You guys, I am also a client of these services, and so I'm not ashamed. And you were part of my I lost 15 pounds last year, and you were part of that, and I feel good and I feel healthy, and I love when businesses take on a cause. And Beads of Courage, tell me about the kind of person that they're helping. So explain to me, if I'm getting a bead of courage, what's going on in my life in order for me to get that?
Well, I have to forewarn you, this is going to pull at your heartstrings. So Jean Grimmon, who's the CEO and founder of Beads of Courage, what they do is they focus on children, like we said, with serious illnesses, not necessarily just confined to cancer, mm-hmm. but they're really struggling with childhood diseases. They're in the hospitals most of their time. Their families are there, and you can imagine it's a family and a community effort to get these children treatment. So they do everything they can to fundraise to support these families. And they've partnered with local artisans, and as you know, Tucson has a plethora of beautiful artisans here who donate and contribute their time, and they make special hand-blown beads, little animal character beads, anything that you can think of that they can string a bead for a child. And as these childs go through treatment, they gather a bead, or they're awarded a bead with every little poke, with every little treatment, with every little chemotherapy. So if you can imagine, through the course of their life, they may collect an entire necklace or bracelets of beads. One of our other patients here recently had a dear niece pass, and she was able to string the entire string of beads all the way around the synagogue. So if you can imagine what they go to on a day-to-day basis, and this brings just a little bright spot into their day that they look forward to. One of the neat things we'll have at the event is something called Sponsor a Bead, where you can actually purchase a bead, an artisan bead for a child, and write a little love note. And those then are distributed to the various hospitals. There's over 400 hospitals that the Arts and Medicine program is in, and they randomly send them out all over the United States. And Jean shared with us the other day when they were here that people and parents open up these little special gifts of courage, and they call and contact her and then say, "My gosh, I received this bead from a very special person in Tucson, Arizona. How did this even happen? It was such a bright spot in their day and a special time for them, something to look forward to." So
do me a favor, give everybody the details one more time for Saturday, your spring open house and charity event with Beads of Courage. Saturday, 11 to 2?
Saturday, April 1st, 11 to 2 at Miramira Med Spa. It's 1880 West Orange Grove. You can look us up or Google us. We do ask that you register on Eventbrite so we get a good idea of the amount of people coming through. It's on the flow. You are going to get a chance to meet our vendors and be educated about services, receive extremely deep discounts on aesthetic procedures and wellness procedures. Please call with any questions at 520-689-6809.
Thanks. I'll see you soon. See you tomorrow.